A lot of us make little notes to ourselves to remember important dates or upcoming events. We might type them into our phones or computer, write them on the back of our hand, or scribble them into a notepad or diary of sorts. Sometimes these notes only make sense to the person who has wrote them, and they may have to transcribe their meaning to others. The FBI came across a note like this in 1999 in the pocket of a deceased man's jeans. A piece of paper with letters, brackets, question marks, and numbers written on it. And while some believe the notes are merely the inner workings of a man's mind, others believe it could be a major clue into solving this man's murder. Let's uncover the unsolved murder of Ricky McCormick. Hello and welcome to the 46th episode of Uncover True Crime Podcast. My name is Stephanie, and each week we uncover a different unsolved true crime case, ranging from missing persons, unsolved murders, Jane and John Doe's, and suspicious deaths. You can listen to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast streaming apps, as well as on YouTube by searching Uncover True Crime. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at @uncover_pod, on Instagram at @uncovertruecrimepod, and you can join the Uncover True Crime discussion group on Facebook. Before we get started on today's case, there's just a couple of things I want to mention. First of all, there has been a small issue with the website, which basically means that I've got to upload every episode, its pictures and its sources again. I'm hoping to get this done quite quickly. But if you do go onto the website and you don't find a specific episode there, that is why, but I'm hoping to get this issue sorted out as soon as possible. Second, I am aware that there are some small updates on cases that we have previously covered. Over the next day or so, I'm going to gather all the updates into a Word document and see if there's enough information to create a whole update episode. In the past, I have given you updates on previous cases at the start of new episodes, and I probably will continue to do this for big updates, but I also think it would be useful to put out update episodes as and when there's enough information to do so. It won't be the next episode after this one, but probably the one after. I also want to thank everyone who has sent me articles relating to updates in the cases that we have covered before. It is really useful and just an extra reminder that you guys care as much about these cases as I do, so thank you very much. But with all that being said, let's uncover the unsolved murder of Ricky McCormick. Ricky McCormick was born on the 14th of June 1958 in Missouri. I couldn't find out a lot about his personality or any anecdotes about him, as most of my sources related on his criminal, educational and life struggles. He didn't do well in school, and by the time he graduated from high school, he was pretty much illiterate. His mother said that he could only write his name and described her son as being quote-unquote retarded. I understand that this is not a very PC term, however it was a direct quote from his mother. His cousin Charles, who Ricky was very close to, said that it was, quote, like he was in another world, unquote, and said that he thinks that Ricky had an undiagnosed mental health issue. His aunt Gloria expanded on this, stating, quote, Ricky went to see a psychiatrist and he said Ricky had a brick wall in his mind. He said Ricky refused to break that wall. He didn't like the life of living poor and had an active imagination, unquote. During playtime at school, Ricky was said to stand by himself and would display odd behaviour and tell, quote, concocting tall stories, unquote. While it is entirely possible he did suffer from mental health issues as an adult, which we definitely will touch on later, it seems to me that his difficulties as a child, plus him struggling to read and write, is probably more due to a learning disability. But obviously, I am not an expert, and I do not know this for sure, it was just a thought I had. As an adult, Ricky had a few different side jobs over the years, including being a dishwasher, a janitor, a busboy, etc. But he mainly supported himself through disability checks, which he received due to his chronic heart and lung issues. His health was not helped by his lifestyle, as he would smoke a packet of cigarettes a day and would drink a lot of coffee and up to 20 energy drinks a day. To add to all these issues, Ricky also got in trouble with the law, as he was arrested in 1992 for raping a 14-year-old girl, who he would only refer to as, quote, pretty baby, unquote. He fathered two children with this girl, whose name has been kept out of the media for obvious reasons, as Ricky had been abusing her since she was 11. He was charged with first-degree sexual abuse, and his lawyer requested that Ricky undergo a mental health evaluation, as he believed his client was, quote, suffering from some sort of mental disease or defect, unquote. He was examined by a psychiatrist who deemed Ricky fit to stand trial, although he ultimately decided to plead guilty to the charge and was sentenced to 13 months in prison. Although, according to some reports, he was released a year early, meaning that he only served 3 months in jail for this crime. An article from the Riverfront Times said that Ricky's crime, quote, reflected an obvious lapse of good judgment, unquote. And I've got to be honest, I have a serious issue with how this is worded. Abusing a child from the age of 11 to 14 and getting her pregnant twice is more than just a lapse of judgment. Yes, it is very possible that Ricky had an intellectual disability or a mental health issue that could have impaired his thinking, social skills and decision making, to name a few, but this cannot excuse rape, which is exactly what he did. I am by no means saying that Ricky deserved to be murdered, but I also don't think that his crimes should be glossed over just because he too was a victim of violence. On the 22nd of June 1999, 41-year-old Ricky was admitted to the Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis, Missouri, with shortness of breath and chest pain. Doctors ruled out the possibility of a heart attack and told him that he had had an asthma flare-up. He was kept in for observation and was discharged on the 24th, but went back to the hospital the day after with the same symptoms. He was not admitted that time, but did apparently spend the night in the hospital's waiting room. On the 26th, he called his Aunt Gloria and said that he had left the hospital and was going to get something to eat from a garage that he would frequent often, called Amaco's. We don't know much about Ricky's movements after this, but the last time he is confirmed to have been seen alive was on the 27th, again from an employee at the Amaco's garage. 3 days later, Ricky's body was found in a cornfield in a rural part of St. Charles County, 15 miles away from his home in St. Louis. Although the medical examiner determined that Ricky had died on the 27th, his body had decomposed at an alarming rate. While this might be due to the heat and humidity, given that it was summertime, only 72 pounds of Ricky remained, and he had to be identified through fingerprints, which were found beside his body. Media reports claimed that due to the condition of Ricky's body, his cause of death couldn't be determined, although police did always suspect foul play. It wasn't until 2011 that Ricky's death would receive any sort of attention, as the FBI revealed a possible clue in the case, which his family had previously been unaware of. On the 26th of March 2011, the FBI revealed that Ricky McCormick had been shot once in the head and that they needed the public's help to decode a note that had been found in his jeans pocket when his body was discovered. If you're watching this on YouTube, photos of the letters are on the screen now. They will also be on my website, or you can easily find them through a Google search. The letters consisted of several letters and numbers that don't have any obvious significance, but the FBI are convinced that they do in fact mean something. The head of the FBI's cryptanalysis unit stated, quote, "It doesn't happen often that we have an unsolved cipher of this length and significance. The characters are not random. There are a lot of E's, for example, which could be used as a spacer. There are a lot of characteristics which suggest that it could be solved. Many patterns. The problem is that we don't know why it is not solvable. This means something. We look at a lot of things that are gibberish, arbitrary strikes on a keyboard. This is not that case," unquote. Decoding the letters has become one of the unit's top priorities, second only to a cipher written by the infamous Zodiac Killer back in 1969, although that cipher was recently cracked. Only 1% of coded letters and ciphers remain uncracked, but how is it possible that a letter written by Ricky, a man who could barely read and can only write his own name, could stump detectives and the FBI for over 20 years? The FBI have said that they are confident that Ricky himself wrote these notes, but I don't know why they think this. As Ricky couldn't write much, I imagine that samples of his handwriting would have been hard to come by. and since his family weren't aware of the letter's existence until a family friend heard about the development on the news, I doubt that it was them that confirmed it was definitely Ricky's writing. His family do not believe that Ricky wrote the letters, although the FBI reportedly said that his family told them that he did often write in code. His family claimed that they actually said that Ricky would write, quote, nonsense that he called writing, unquote. I can understand how this could be misinterpreted, however I think the FBI are ignoring the fact that Ricky had severe dyslexia and was basically illiterate. There is a massive difference between Ricky writing random letters because he was unable to write sentences and him writing letters and numbers in a sophisticated, unbreakable code. Is it possible that this was Ricky's form of shorthand in order to remember things, and we simply can't decipher it because it would only make sense to him? Possibly, but in my opinion, unlikely. The next theory regarding the letters is that someone else wrote them. But then, why would Ricky have had them on him when he was murdered? Despite several FBI agents and amateur code breakers looking over the letter, no one has ever been able to crack the code, which is why they decided to release the letter to the public. From the information I was able to source online, it seemed as though the first time Ricky's death was publicly declared a murder coincided with the release of the note. As I stated earlier, there are articles about Ricky's case that state that the medical examiner was not able to pinpoint a cause of death, although this seems hard to believe if he was indeed shot in the head. His case did not receive a lot of media attention at the time, and I think it's possible that due to Ricky's sexual offences and drug connections, that the media wouldn't have been too invested in publicising his story. It is also possible that this is just misinformation, or perhaps the FBI deliberately withheld this information, fearing that releasing Ricky's cause of death would compromise the investigation. We just don't know. But anyway, back to the note. According to the FBI, there are four steps in cracking any code. First, determining the language being used. Then, determining the system being used, for example, word substitution or each letter standing for a different word. Then you have to reconstruct the key. And last of all, translate it into plain text. With Ricky's note, the FBI have never been able to get past stage 2, which is bizarre since that this same unit have been able to crack codes used by the Nazis in World War II. Now, I am no code breaker, I have absolutely no experience in this field whatsoever, but I wanted to share what stands out to me about this note. The letters WLD are found together in the note 9 times. And 7 of those times, it is followed up by the letters NCBE, which many online sleuthers believe could stand for No Cash Being Exchanged. Other sequences that occurred multiple times in the note are ALTRSE, NSE, RCBR, PLSE, INC, PRCE, ON, ODE and TRFXL. What any of these sequences stand for, I can't say, but I do believe that no matter what the true intention of this letter was, I believe that cracking its code is essential to solving his case. And with that, let's get into the theories, which, like all theories we discuss on this podcast, are all pure speculation. Around 2 weeks before he died, Ricky made a trip to Orlando, Florida, where he stayed in an Echo Lodge. Whilst there, he placed several calls from the landline in his hotel room. Some of these calls were to his girlfriend, Sandra Jones, some of them were to other people who lived in Florida, and some were to the Almarco garage, which, as I said earlier, he was known to frequent and occasionally work. According to Sandra, Ricky made regular trips to Florida where he would pick up weed for the owner of the garage, pretty much like a drug courier. The owner of the garage is a man called Baha Hamdallah, although I will be referring to him as Bob throughout the rest of the episode, as that is what he was most commonly known by. Sandra said that Ricky never liked talking about these trips, but when he returned from the last one just days before he died, something about him was different. He seemed scared of something, but he didn't want to say what. His aunt Gloria got the same impression and believes that he was possibly using his heart and lung problems as an excuse to get himself admitted into hospital in the days leading up to his murder, in order to escape from those who he thought could possibly do him harm. Quote, maybe he knew he got into something that would put his life on the line. He knew he could have stayed here, but maybe he didn't want to put my life on the line. Unquote. An article written by the Riverfront Times describes how Bob and Juma Hamdala were both violent offenders with criminal records. The pair, who I believe to be brothers, were both said to be violent, even to each other, as Juma had once shot Bob during a dispute, although Bob did survive and chose not to press charges. This same article goes into a lot of details about the pair's crimes, but I want to focus on their connection to Ricky. Is it possible that something major went wrong on this last trip to Florida and the Hamdalas killed him out of retaliation? I think it's possible that one of the Hamdalas wrote the note and gave it to Ricky to give to the buyers in Florida, as it's possible that the buyers would know the Hamdalas' shorthand and would know what all the letters and numbers stood for. Again, this is just a theory, but the Hamdalas were not the only people that Ricky knew who were involved in drugs. In the early days of the investigation, a multi-agency meeting regarding Ricky's murder was held in the St. Louis Police Headquarters. In attendance was a special agent from the FBI, officers from the US Department of Housing and Urban Development, and detectives from the Homicide and Narcotic Divisions. They talked about a man called Gregory Lamar Knox and whether he was somehow involved in Ricky's death. At the meeting, Gregory was described as a major drug dealer who was known to operate in the housing complex where Ricky McCormick lived at the time of his death. Gregory is reportedly suspected of being involved in several murders, including two murders for hire, and according to a confidential informant, Gregory Knox admitted to killing a black man who worked at the Almarco gas station and dumping his body near West Alton Street. Was this informant talking about Ricky's murder? We don't know for sure, but the details do seem very similar. Police set up covert surveillance on Gregory and the gas station, but no additional evidence was uncovered. So for right now, that's all we have on Gregory's potential involvement in Ricky's murder. Gregory has had several brushes with the law though, as he pled guilty with possession with intent to distribute crack cocaine, drug trafficking, and carrying an illegal firearm back in January 2001. He served his sentence in Kentucky, but was arrested again in 2016 as part of the Mission Save initiative, which was established in 2013. SAVE, which stands for Strike Against Violence Early, is a task force made up of members of the FBI, DEA, St. Louis Police Department, St. Louis County Prosecutor's Office, the St. Louis City Circuit Attorney's Office, and the US Attorney's Office to combat crime in the area. Thanks to SAVE, 18 people, including Gregory, were arrested on 20 federal charges, including murder, several other violent crimes, and drug-related offences. The 17 other people arrested were as follows: Jose Alfredo Velasquez, Adrian Lemons, Anthony Jordan, Dwayne Rainey, Juan Ramon Garza, Luis Fernando Cantu, Laron Coleman, Lewis Felton, Clarence Miller, Demetrius O'Neill, Matrice Woodson, Larry Boyd, and Gloria Ward. An article from St. Louis Today reported that there were 4 murder indictments pending against 2 of the 18 individuals, and while Gregory was not one of them, there are as many as 17 murders that are suspected of being connected to this drug ring. I couldn't find any information on what exactly Gregory was arrested for, the outcome of these cases, or even if Ricky's murder is thought to be connected to this drug ring, but in my opinion, it does seem like a strong possibility. But as of right now, that is all we have. Possibilities. Ricky McCormick was laid to rest in the Lauryn Hill Memorial Gardens in St. Louis, Missouri, although you would never know that he was there as there is no headstone or marking on his grave. Just 3 years after Ricky's murder, Bob Humdallah was convicted of murdering a customer at his store, although this was overturned in 2008, and he has since moved to the Philippines to start a new life. His brother Jima has since moved to Cleveland, Ohio, presumably to do the same. I couldn't find any updates on Gregory Knox's drug charges, so I am unsure of his current whereabouts. A massive cloud of uncertainty hangs over this case, but with any luck, someone will be able to crack the infamous code found on Ricky's body, and his case one day will be solved. If you have any information regarding Ricky's case, or you think you may have cracked the code on the note, you can contact the FBI Major Case Centre at 1-800-CALL-FBI, which is 225-5342. You could also write to the Crypto Analysis and Racketeering Unit, and the address is as follows: FBI Laboratory, Crypto Analysis and Racketeering Records Unit, 2501 Investigation Parkway, Quantico, VA 22135, and please mark the envelope with Attention to Ricky McCormick Case. All photos and sources related to this case can be found on our website, uncovertruecrimepodcast.co.uk. That is everything I have for you today. Thank you for listening till the very end. Please stay safe and have a good night.